Session number 17628, Mr. Joseph Clark, Reel 21.
Mr. Clark, 21. It's that you left 64th General.
It was the 30th of June when I left there.
What year? That 1942.
30th of June 1942.
And where did you go?
And I was put on the same hospital ship that brought us out to Tobruk, the Abba, and it took us to Haifa, Palestine. And on the 2nd of July I was taken off the Abba hospital ship and was taken to the 23rd Scottish General. I don't know the name of the place, name of the place in Palestine. I think it was something like Sarafan, but I'm not sure. But that's where I went to, the 23rd Scottish General.
What was the treatment like that you were getting on the ship and at the Scottish General Hospital?
Oh, it was very good. In fact, when I got to the 23rd Scottish General, one of the orderlies said to me, there's another DLI sergeant down the other end of the ward. And I said, find out who he is, and he came back and told it was Sergeant Tommy Nimmons from Consett. And we were good friends because he was the battalion orderly room sergeant. And he had his bed moved up next to me, and I was there with him for 6 weeks, around about 6 weeks. And everything I wanted, that lad got for me. He was wounded, but he was able to walk around. And that was Tommy Nimmons.
What treatment were they giving you for your leg now?
Well, it was being irrigated, the stump, you know. But on the 10th of July, while I was in there, I had to have another blood transfusion. Well treated.
Why was this?
The blood transfusion? I really don't know. But I had to have this transfusion.
The fact that you'd lost a limb and you were a young man, was it beginning to bother you that you were not whole any longer in that sense? Were you worried about the future at this point?
Well, you kept thinking about it. You know, you couldn't get it out of your mind. You didn't know what was going to happen when you did, if you did get home. But I didn't know what was in store for me.
Did you get anything like counselling in those days as people come along to talk to you, help you through the psychological side of your injury?
No. But whilst I was in there, after I'd had the transfusion, on the 25th of July, the MO that was wounded with me, the DLI MO, Captain McKenna, he happened to be in the same hospital. And he came round to see me. I didn't know he was there. He didn't know I was there, but he found out somehow. And he came to see me. That was on the 25th of July. And then I don't know what happened to him. He'd been wounded in the legs when we were blown up with a truck coming out of the Gazala box.
Was this hospital the same as or less comfortable than the one you'd been in? Was the discipline stronger? Was more expected of you? Or was it about the same?
No, about the same, I would think. There was like two wards in the sisters' room and all, and it was like in the middle, they were like, you had one at each end sort of style. There was a lot of people in there, though, mind.
You would be bedbound, were you? You weren't getting out at all?
No. From being wounded, I was still being carried around. No. In fact, the only way I could look out of the... I didn't know what it was like outside, but there was a window behind me. When Tommy Nimmons was next to me, I got a mirror. And I used to look through the mirror to look out of the window. But it was... There was nothing interesting other than that.
How did you keep your spirits up? You obviously had someone
well,
next to you.
I was lucky to have Tom Nimmons with me in this particular case. Everything I want, last thing at night, he used to make sure, he used to ask me, is there anything you want now? But that was it. He was a good lad. Good lad.
Did the medical staff help in their way? Were they jovial or confident
in that
sense?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
Is there any doctor or nurse that stands out in your memory from that stage of your moving about?
The sister, well, you see, they were mostly medical lads, you know.
Mostly men.
Men. But there was a sister in charge, I can't remember her name. She was good, though. They were all right.
Had your family back home found out what had happened to you by now?
No. But this Captain McKenna asked me, and he wrote to my mother, told them what had happened.
So they knew that you'd lost a leg?
Oh, they knew I'd been wounded, but they didn't know I'd lost a leg. Not until they got the letter. No. Yeah, he said he would write, and he did. He was a Scottish doctor. He was a young doctor, but he was great. Yeah.
The food in the hospital and the all-round supports, things that you're getting, support services, were they good?
I thought I was well-tread, but of course I wasn't eating a lot, you know. You know, I had, before this, I'd had lots of transfusions, you know, in the first instance.
Was there a crisis period when you know, the shock hit you hard? Did that occur in your condition?
The only time I can remember that happening was when I was in Tobruk, and I was wounded on the 1st of June, and I think it was about the 8th of June, say a week, and I must have been unconscious all the time. I can't remember. I couldn't tell you what happened in that week. But it was about somewhere about after a week, there was a doctor came round the ward, and he just ruffled me and said, sorry, son, we had to take your leg off. Now, that was the only time. And I remember there was only a white sheet on the bed, you know, because it was so hot. And I remember looking underneath the sheet, and there it was gone. That was the only time.
Did you break down when you found that?
I'm not afraid to say, I think that was when I would probably shed a tear. I think so. But that was the biggest shock. When you look and you see you can still feel your toes, even though the leg's amputated. You can still feel them today after all these 50 odd years.
So back to the Scottish General Hospital, what happened to you next?
I left the 23rd Scottish General on 14th of August, so I would be there, I must have been there about 6 weeks. I was taken to a railway station and put on the train, and the next day, 15th of August, we arrived at the 13 General Hospital Sewers, which we sometimes call Tewfik. And the reason for that was we were going to be put on another hospital ship, but I didn't know then where to. And on the 16th of August, I was put on the hospital ship Atlantis. And to get on board that ship, you see, I was a stretcher case, still a stretcher case. And somehow or other, the stretcher, it was like that, something put onto it, and it was winched up the side of the ship, like through a winch. And there was somebody steadying the stretcher, you see. I suppose this happened to all cases like me. And the strange thing was, as I was being winched up the side of that hospital ship, Atlantis, I heard a voice shout to me. And it was Bill Ridley. He had already arrived there and been put on board the ship. And he was on board there, and he saw me, and he recognised me being, he was looking over the rail. And that was another one that I met on my travels.
He'd had an arm injury.
He'd been injured after me. I'm not exactly sure about Bill's injury. Yes, he'd had an injury. And once I got settled down in the ward on board the ship, I believe that the beds, such for the likes of me, they seemed to be fitted to the, so that they wouldn't move about with the rocking of the ship. Because there were it was a single bed.
Was it crowded?
Oh, yes.
Did that cause any discomfort to you? I know you were, in effect, bed-bound, but was it any discomfort having so many people around you?
No, no. And one thing I will say, Bill Ridley did anything I want, he used to keep coming back and say, you know, during the day or on the voyage. And it did help get it. So it just shows you, from Tommy Nimmons at Bourne Hospital to this lad on board the ship. And I learned then that we're on the way to South Africa.
And what did you feel about that?
Well, I'd been to South Africa on the way out. And that was the year before. I was well treated on board that ship, but I remember going through the Red Sea. I was put on board the ship on the 16th of August, and on the 21st of August, we arrived at Aden and left the same day. So we must have gone down the Red Sea, because I remember there was a lot of kids like me that prickly heat through not being able to get about. That was a bit...
Was it air-conditioned, the ship, or your deck?
I believe it was.
Must have been
it was a big hospital ship.
Must have been very uncomfortable, though, in the heat and not being able to...
You weren't able to move. No, you couldn't move. You were always sweating, you know, wet with sweat.
Were they giving you medication at all to offset...
Dressing the stump. Oh, yes.
Basically dressing the stump.
Oh, yes.
What about injections? Were you getting any of those at all?
Well, I can't remember. Not on board the ship. See, I was beginning to improve then.
But they monitor your progress pretty closely, did they?
Oh, yes. In fact, I had a Thomas splint on for that journey.
What exactly is that?
And you should put it onto your thigh. And I don't know what the stuff was. It was like a loop put in, and there was a cord. This was when I left, before I got on board the hospital ship, and they used to have about a 10-pound sandbag on the end, and I understood that was for skin extension. The weight was pulling it down, you see, pulling your muscles down, because they were receding.
Must have been extremely uncomfortable.
Yes, it was a Thomas splint, and I had that on, and I had to lift it all the time while he had this extension on.
Were you still in great pain at this time?
Well, mostly you feel your toes and everything, you know. That was the type of pain it was.
They
called them phantom toes.
They didn't give you any drug or medication to take the pain
well,
away?
Well, they may have done, but not that I know of. They probably did. Because I know when I was in Alexandria, they used to come round and give you tablets to ease the pain. But that was previously, you see.
What happened for the rest of the journey?
The Atlantis was a big ship. And we left Aden on the 21st of August. And on the 30th of August, I've written down, the splint was removed on board the ship. They took it off.
And that must have been a relief.
Yeah. You'll be more mobile, as the saying is. Even if, oh, you're in bed, you're more mobile. Because the splint used to sort of weigh you down more or less.
How did you fill in your day? And you're pretty, as you say, you're immobilised and lying there. How did you fill in your day? It must have been pretty long and boring.
Well, the days were long. And just talking to other lads that were in similar position, you know. And the orderlies.
Did you have chaps in your own, on your own deck who were still suffering a great deal and having a lot
of... there were none of the DLI that I, apart from Ridley, but he wasn't on the same deck as me. Because he was able to walk about. He used to come up and see me in this, I suppose it was a ward for the cases like mine.
The nursing people on the ship, were they men or women?
Both. Both. Yeah.
What nationalities were the doctors?
Well, during my time, there was the Scottish doctors, but in Alexandria, it was, I believe that was a naval hospital, and because they used to call the orderly stewards, and they were. I believe there were Navy personnel. The doctor that I can remember certainly was. He was a Navy doctor. But, no, I think there was a mixed lot of people, doctors and nurses.
What time did they wake you on a morning? Must there be a basic discipline for the routine of the ship?
It would be around the usual 6 o'clock, you know.
Then what happened to you when you woke at 6? What happened to you then?
Well, they used to come and wash, you know, wash you up and tidy you up. But some of them were male orderlies. They were male REMC people.
And then did you have breakfast?
Yeah. Yes.
Do you recall what they were giving you as patients?
No.
Was it better than what you'd been getting in, you know, in the army itself?
Well, it was served up differently than when I was in the mobile.
After breakfast, was then time, well, or were there inspections from the medical?
Well, there was the medical, the doctors used to come round. They kept a good watch. I must have been well treated, because from this time to being on board that ship, I'd been carried from one place to another. So there must have been some good organisation somewhere.
After the medical and after your breakfast and the medical inspections, was basically left to yourself then for a
to
lunchtime, presumably. Mm-hmm. And then the routine again. Did they examine you or look at you?
Several
stages during the day.
There were always doctors, you know, with a stethoscope and what have you, blood pressure and so on. You know, it couldn't have been. In my memory, I wouldn't have survived if I hadn't been treated as well as this. I don't think so.
What time was lights out?
10. 10 o'clock at night.
In the hospitals and on the ship, did you have access to say, books or things like that too?
Well, they were there if you needed them, you know, you could ask for them. Of course, the hospital ship was lit up all the time during the war. Right. And she was a big ship, Atlantis. But at the time, I don't know whether Ridley told me at the time, but he may have told me we were on the way to South Africa. But on the 2nd of September, so we must have been on board that ship, how long? A couple of weeks? 16th of August to the 2nd of September. We arrived at Durban, South Africa. And I didn't see this, but they got us. I was taken from that hospital ship and put on a hospital train.
Do you remember the reception at the quayside? Was there
a... Oh, yes. In fact, even going out and coming back, there used to be a woman used to sing there. She was a professional, and she used to meet all convoys. Even when we went out, I remember that woman. She had been a professional singer.
And coming off the ship yourself with the rest of the wounded, was there reception there? Were the people there? What
there was lots of people
to
there.
To receive you?
Yeah. There was lots of people there. And we were put on board the train on the 3rd of September. That was the day after we arrived at Durban. And I didn't know where we were going. But the following day, we arrived at Johannesburg. But I understand some of them, like Ridley, Bill Ridley, he went to a hospital called Oraby, I think it was, near Pietermaritzburg. But the cases like mine, we went right up to Johannesburg. And I was carried into the hospital there, and they called it Paragwanath Military Hospital. And that was on 4th of September, 1942.
What were your initial impressions of that hospital on arrival?
Well, it was a hospital. It was an Imperial hospital. It had been built especially, I believe, for these troops coming down from the Middle East and what have you. And I was taken to Ward 6. And the strangest thing happened again in my time. I was lying in Ward 6, and there was some of the lads used to come and visit others, you know, from different wards. And there was a soldier walking towards me, and when I looked up and he saw me, it was my mate that had been blown up with me on the truck. And they called him Charlie Bird. He lived down the Midlands, but he had originated from Spennymoor. And I thought, how strange. There's lots of things happened in my life that you would hardly credit. But to be wounded up in the Western Desert in Libya, taken to various hospitals and hospital ships, and arriving 6,000 miles away in Johannesburg, and this lad walking down the ward. And he couldn't believe it, that we met all that time after. And that was from the 1st of June to the 4th of September. And Charlie, of course, once he knew I was in there, he kept coming in every day because he was in another ward. But he had been in that ward. He'd been wounded in his legs. But he was able to walk around. And I thought, strange thing to meet a lad 6,000 miles away. And I'd been with him for a couple of years, and we were blown up together. And I've met him since, of course, since I've been home all these years. He was living down near Chester. But the nursing staff in there were Canadian sisters. There were English ones in as well, but this ward was run by Canadian nursing sisters and staff nurses. South African doctors, or Afrikaans, but they were South African. And the nurses were South African. But it was a real big hospital, Paragwanath.
Now, how did they treat you?
Oh, I was treated well. Treated well there.
Things must have changed from the other hospitals, and that was...
Yes.
Food must have been much better and...
Oh, yes, it was served
variety.
Up differently. And there was female nurses, you see. They didn't do the cleaning of the ward. They had Well, they were actually black soldiers, but they were, or coloured. They used to do the cleaning of the ward, the floors and the lockers and that, under supervision from the staff. But they were in, like an army uniform. They were actually, you could say they were in the army, but they were orderlies in this instance, in the hospital.
How were they treated? How did you see them as being treated? By the white officers.
Well, at that time they seemed to be well looked after, but they were under strict discipline. They were well disciplined. Anything the nurse wanted, or any, there was no answering back or anything like that. They were well disciplined. See, this was something strange to us. We used to talk to them. They would stand and talk to us.
And this was loud, they weren't chased off.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, well, you could talk to them. Yeah. And whilst I was in Ward 6, this Charlie Bird, he said, there's one of the officers in, I forget the number of the ward, I think it was either 7 or 8, and they called him Mr. Thomas. He was a lieutenant in our lot and had been wounded. Well, I knew him, and Charlie says, I'll saw the sister, and he says, I'll come down one day and we'll put you in the wheelchair, take you out to see Mr. Thomas. It was only like 2 wards away. And this is another thing that happened in my life. Whilst in seeing Mr. Thomas, because he knew me, but he was pleased to see somebody from his own unit, because it was an officer's ward. They were still there, separate there. They still kept officers in that ward. See, that must have been part of the discipline, officers as against other ranks. But anyway, of course, when you got in, they were just the same as us, only that they were officers. And he said to me, there's a nursing sister on here from England. I says, all right. He says, and she comes from Easington Colliery. I says, get away. She says, yeah. I said, I'll have to come and see her because I live next door at Horden. And he says, when she comes on duty, I'll find out when she's on duty. And Charlie Bird came round and he took me back to see Mr. Thomas. And this sister was on duty and she came down and she was over the moon to be able to talk. And they called her Sister Mary Hornsby from Office Street in Easington Colliery. She couldn't believe it. That he was me from Horden, and her parents, her father and mother, were still living. I think she'd emigrated and she joined the South African Nursing Service, and she was a nursing sister. And her father and mother were still living at Easington. And before I left, she says, when you get back home, will you go and see them for me? And I did. And that was Sister Mary Hornsby. And I thought, how strange, all these different things happening in your lifetime. I'd met Tommy Nimmons, I'd met Ridley, then Charlie Bird walking down the ward, then learning about this Mr. Thomas just by going to see him. I was in contact with Mary Hornsby. And I thought, how strange.
Did this help to keep your spirits up? How were you feeling at this point?
Oh, yes. Well, it was beginning to change then. You begin to realise that there was still something there, you know. Or you got more happier. And of course, again, with knowing Charlie Burton, having served with him in all kinds of theatres, you know, Cyprus and Palestine, Iraq and that, he came down, and the first time that I was taken out of the bed properly and put in a wheelchair was Charlie Bird did it. He asked the sister if he could take me up to the YMCA, which was in the grounds. And I said, Charlie, you're the last one to save me on my feet. Full blown up. And I says, you're the first one to take me out in the wheelchair.